lesbian, bi, and trans folks, the internet has become a vital tool for making political activism more effective. How can you leverage the power of group blogs to get your message across? Today, we continue our series of interviews with well-known bloggers with longtime LGBT activist and political writer Bill Browning. Bill's the founder and editor-in-chief of the Bolerico Project, one of the nation's top LGBT community blogs.
Bill works with hundreds of writers to inform and bring about social change by pressuring companies and politicians to stop their hateful practices. One powerful moment came last year as the Bolerico Project came under attack by the lawyers for Rockstar Energy Drink for posting an opinion piece about the company's ties to radio hatemonger Michael Savage.
Instead of backing down, Bolerico opened up a can of gay whoop-ass, launching a successful boycott of the sugary caffeinated beverage, which led to the company cutting its financial ties to the talk radio host and donating over $100,000 to further LGBT causes. That's how you do it!
Listen as we chat with Bill about why bloggers and musicians stay in the closet, the blog swarm targeted at HRC, and when to pull the plug on a hot discussion that goes too far.
Plus, what will happen to the Indiana seat now that Senator Bay has decided not to run for re-election?
The changing face of journalism.
And we managed to pull out of Bill what his real drag name is. Woo! I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Hello?
Is this Bill Browning?
It is.
It's Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion from the Feast of Fun.
Woo! Hey, Bill.
How are you?
We're doing great. I'm so excited to be going down to Austin, Texas, the heart of the Southwest for South by Southwest. And we're doing a queer community online panel, the only gay thing at the Music and Media Conference. How about that, huh?
Yeah, only gay thing ever.
Ever done.
Really? Is that the first time they've ever done any kind of gay panel there?
Yeah, from that's what I understand.
Well, I want to clarify one thing. I did perform at South by Southwest back in 1993, so technically this is the second gay thing.
Yeah, but this is a panel discussing gay things. You're not
that's
throwing
true.
Spaghetti at an audience.
That's true. So, Bill, the point of all this panel is to help our brothers and sisters and intergendered friends how to make their blog fabulous. Right?
Well, it's more than just a little bit of bling.
You got to put something in the swing.
Yeah, well, you know, I figure it can't all be just, you know, pasties and, you know, cubic zirconias everywhere.
So you started your website, Bolerico, almost, God, that's almost 10, do I want to say 10
years
ago?
4 years ago, wasn't it?
Well, 10 years ago it was started, and then you started as a blog, as a community blog about 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yeah, we kind of morphed into a blog. It was just my homepage. I think it migrated from GeoCities when a friend of mine bought me Bolerico.com about 10 years ago. And then it just kind of slowly over time turned into a blog that originally was focused on Indiana politics, and then we went national.
So it seems like Bolerico's history mirrors the history of the internet in the way that people have been putting content on it for years, going from blogs to group blogs to videos and podcasts. What do you see as the future? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think so. I think, especially with as much traffic as you're expected to bring in, or you want to bring in at least, and as much content as people want you to generate, I mean, one person can't be the, you know, New York Times. It takes more than, if it was just me trying to keep up with Bolerico, I think I'd go nuts in about 3 days. But, you know, all of our contributors really help to bring in the content. There are eyes, there are ears, the projectors, our readers do the same thing. They send in tips constantly. If it was just a solo project, I can't imagine doing it, just only me. That would be a nightmare scenario. I don't know. You know, Joe My God, for example, Joe Jervis, he does his by himself, and You know, he doesn't write a whole heck of a lot on it. It's a lot of clips, but because he puts out so much content, I'm just in awe of how much he does.
Well, maybe he might have a ghostwriter. We're going to get him on the show in a couple of weeks, and we'll ask him that.
But there you go.
But right now, Bellerico, its claim to fame is that it's the largest online GLBT or LGBT, if you want to put ladies first, group blog out there.
We are.
So how do you get all these people to participate? And this is a question that people may want to start their own group blog on a different focus. It might not be gay and lesbian rights. It might be a bunch of drag queens mm-hmm. getting along.
Cookie jars.
Miracles do happen. And so they could get together and start a group blog. How do you convince or entice people to submit content to your site?
Well, Bellerico is an invitation-only site, so we will send someone an invitation and ask them if they would like to post here. Since we kind of now have the status, you know, like the Huffington Post for LGBT blogs, most people accept our invitations now, but back in the beginning when we were first launching and we first had the idea, we literally just went through and made up a wish list of everybody that we wished blogged at one place because they would bring just a really diverse voice to it. It wouldn't just be the same echo chamber that it always is in a lot of places. And, you know, the people would challenge each other and disagree with each other and, well, kind of be more like our real community. And we went through our wish list and just basically laid out our elevator speech. This is what we want to do. This is why we want to do it. And would you like to join in? The vast majority of them said yes, thought it was a great idea. I mean, we have several contributors now that have their own blogs, and they blog for us, and maybe they'll cross-post us another site, too, or with Daily Kos or on Facebook. So anymore, they're not really our contributors, and there may not be as much exclusive content, but it's more of an aggregation because we've become where everyone, if you've got the story that you want to be seen, come put it on Bellerico, if it's political related, especially.
Do you feel that your role now has become more of an editor as opposed to a writer?
Sometimes I do. But for the most part, we try, especially editing actual, like proofreading the posts, that's about all that we do. We'll check to, you know, make sure that your punctuation is okay, you're not, you know, you don't have a typo in your post or something. But we kind of focus on leaving the contributors' thoughts where they are and not really be, there's so many posts that go up on Bellerico for so many different aspects of our community that there's no way that I could possibly agree with every one of them.
Mm-hmm. I heard, you know, Kate Clinton types in all capital letters and ends their sentences in ellipses, which is three little dots. Is that true?
I'll just tell you, Alex, our managing editor, once got so frustrated with a contributor that he sent an email that said, "Will, comma, you, comma, please, comma, learn, comma, how, comma, comma, use, comma, a, comma, comma, comma."
Oh yeah, some people, they just don't know how to use commas, and they go crazy.
You'd be really, really surprised sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and other times, you know, people that you would think, you know, wouldn't give a crap about grammar or spelling will come out just pitch perfect.
You'd be surprised. Well, sometimes, though, you do have problems, though, with, I remember reading on your blog several months ago, there was somebody that had an older blogger, I think he was 83, and he expressed some things about the trans community, which everybody, it seemed on your blog, just swarmed on him and attacked him. And eventually, I think you asked him to stop blogging.
Yes, we after that post, it was his very first post.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it was his first and last post?
Tell
us the story, Bill.
Guest posted a couple three times before, and a lot of our contributors will guest post first to see what kind of reaction they get. And his other posts, pretty non-controversial. They were popular. People talked in the comment threads about him. And then this one went up, and it was my fault. I have to take the responsibility for putting it up. I realized that it would be controversial, but I didn't think it would be as hurtful as it was. Mm-hmm. You know, not sometimes.
Well, what did he say?
He was really transphobic. Without going into and repeating it, you know, for everything that he said, just leave it at he was really transphobic. I assumed in good faith that his point that he was trying to say, because it was called "No to the Notion of Transgender."
No
and
to
so
the notion.
I assumed that he was trying to say that, you know, you shouldn't have to be transgender as an other gender. Mm-hmm. You should all be on one continuous spectrum, more like sexuality. The way that he said it, however, being elderly and not as up to date with common terminology, he said some really offensive things. And you could tell that he'd not been around the movement for forever.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy founded NGLTF, was one of the co-founders, and wrote the first GLAD style guide. So you kind of take it with an assumption that, oh, the readers will say, you know, your language is very problematic, or, you know, will express them, and they expressed themselves quite dramatically. They expressed themselves, and apparently it was a lot more offensive than I would have thought. And I mean, looking at it now, after it's been explained to me, I can see why. Mr. Gold, however, didn't see it that way.
I mean, it can be very hard to please everybody and at the same time create a dialogue and a conversation on your website that is passionate and hot.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance? How do you decide to balance? I mean, there is. It seems like it's an example where the balance went off one side, and then the consequences that this valuable contributor decided to leave and not participate in the future, or did you guys ask him not to participate?
Actually, the editorial team asked him not to participate.
Okay.
We have very few quote-unquote rules for Balearico because we have so many people that take just opposite views of things, and we want them there for the discussion. But we really ask that our contributors at least be willing to dialogue and understand where the readers are coming from and be able to have some back and forth. And Mr. Gold just wasn't able to do that.
So he couldn't understand.
He was absolutely right, and just, I'm going to repeat every transphobic thing I've ever heard and say that it's correct, because I heard it once.
All right.
Because my feeling is, if you upset somebody, you're doing your job.
And, you know, I would normally agree with that. And we've let posts stay. You know, we did the Rockstar Energy Drink, you know, where... we had a guest blogger that posted about Rockstar, and they called and threatened to sue us for millions of dollars if we didn't remove the post. And, you know, we left that post up and just did a public campaign against Rockstar that ended up in them giving over $100,000 to LGBT groups and to get us to leave them alone. But in this case, we took down, I mean, Ron Gold's post was so offensive that there were even death threats that were made against Balearico contributors that weren't part of the ed team, had nothing to do with it, hadn't even blogged that day. It just really set off a nerve in the transgender community. And I guess I shouldn't say just the transgender community, because there were quite a few.
Hey, you got to be careful with people who have T-shirts that says, I'm all out of estrogen and I have a gun. It's like, you take that seriously.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the threats that came in, we really had to take very, very seriously.
Did you report them to the police?
Some of them, yeah, had to be reported.
Did anything come of that?
No.
See, this is my bone to pick with anybody who tries to silence somebody on the internet. No one's stopping you, and because we get a lot of controversy ourselves, and find ourselves in a firestorm that's out of our control. But what I would like to say to those individuals is, no one's stopping you from expressing your opinion, and we want your opinion even if it disagrees with us. Now, if you're trying to stop us from expressing our voice by violence or threats of violence, I think that's when you cross the line, isn't it?
Right, and I would agree. And I think you'd probably agree with me that once you hit a certain level, you kind of just have to expect the kooky emails and the, you know, conspiracy theories and everything else that just kind of come along with it. You know?
I don't know, Bill. I can out-crazy anyone.
See? Well, is it you that's been writing me those emails?
Well, only the ones who are citing my naked photos of myself. But but seriously,
see,
next
time don't cut off the head, then I'll know.
Well, so, I mean, how do you deal with, like, people who are posting comments on a website who may be anonymous, the trolls, the bullies? Because you do want comments. Like, you know, the biggest complaint I get from bloggers that are starting is, like, nobody comments on our blog, you know?
You know, and the number one thing that I hear from those of us that have the larger sites now is, oh, this would be so much better without all these commenters.
Really?
Yeah, because after a while, one of the big problems, at least especially with Balearica, that we have is, you know, we don't want to stifle the conversation. But at what point have you just gone too far and you're not even trying to, as you said, you're just being a troll.
Mm-hmm.
You moderate them? Do you moderate them? Are you censoring them? Are you not censoring them? What goes too far? You know, if somebody says something transphobic or homophobic, do you leave it up? Or do you say, well, you know, this is for our community, obviously.
Well, what do you do?
You know, Jesus says you're going to hell, just trash the comment.
Do you do that?
Well, it kind of depends. We have our own comment policy now that specifically says if you say something that's transphobic or homophobic, or a slur or a personal attack, that we will delete the comment. But we've had to because of, you know, several flame wars that have broken out that, you know, you can have the most serious post that, you know, really needs attention that will get 3 comments, and then you'll have something stupid that will get, you know, hundreds of comments with people just being nasty to each other.
Well, here's one solution that I propose to people who may be listening to this is when people start repeating themselves and going back and forth in an argument online, it really is because they don't feel like their opinion, and in real life, they don't feel like their opinion matters or is being heard. So when you're arguing with somebody, the best thing you can do to de-escalate the tension is to repeat or echo back their opinion, even if you disagree with it.
Agreed. And you know, it's really interesting because you know that you're dealing online. You have no idea what the person at the other end of that keyboard looks like, or, you know, you could be dealing with an 8-year-old and you have no idea.
Or a really attractive person that you might want to be lovers with eventually. But, you know, it's like sometimes the passion can be a good thing.
Or it could be Fred Phelps. You have no idea. It's the internet. It's as anonymous as it can be, and people lie on the internet constantly.
Well, do you get...
We've had contributors that get really worked up over comment threads, you know, with, well, I'm really arguing with so-and-so, and you just have to say, do you even know who that person is? Do you know if they're mentally capable of having a rational argument with anyone about anything? Or that they're not just 8 years old and sitting in their room and thinking this is really funny, they're getting you worked up.
Well, one trend that I'm starting to see, especially Facebook is sort of like pushing this trend, is for authenticity and for people to use their legal full names. And their argument is because, you know, people will behave better when they know there are consequences to what they say online. But I don't think, like, observing in Facebook that really stops anybody from putting their foot in their mouth.
Well, no, because I think we're always going to put our foot in our mouth. I mean, that's not relegated to just Facebook users. As a blogger, I do that on a pretty regular basis. But I think there is something to when you're actually putting your name behind it, suddenly it gives you a little more responsibility. And, you know, when your name is, you know, Anonymous Troll 707, well, that could be anyone, and I could be as nasty as I want to be. If it's going to be traced back to Bill Browning the next that I go get a job and somebody does a Google search and all they see is me cussing somebody out,
it's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's completely different.
And listen, if your mother wants to communicate with you that way, just call her on the phone.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
Because my mother does do that. She has Facebookhausen syndrome, and she like posts like, my children don't call me, and I'm like on Facebook, and then I get into trouble, and I'm like, Mom, I just talked to you earlier today.
Like, oh, call. Well, Bill, is your site targeted by the Christians or the conservatives? Do they visit your site and try and engage you guys and say you're going to hell?
Of course, yes. We get quoted by Focus on the Family and the Indiana
Family. Other FOF.
Yeah, we get quoted by them all the time for one thing or another. So at this point, it's just become one of, you know, I think Pam's House Blend does it as well, where you just kind of lift up the quotes where they say nasty things about you and wear them as a badge of honor.
Because I would have the video of Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford screaming, "Don't fuck with me, fellas." And you know, you shouldn't fuck with Balearica because you guys did a lot of cause a lot of pain and suffering in a good way to Michael Savage, the conservative talk radio host who has ties to Rockstar Energy Drink. And so how did this all finally play out? Like, you guys got the energy drink company to divest their relations with Michael Savage? Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us the story behind that, because it really blew up.
Yes, it really did. It took the internet by storm. I was really proud of how that actually ended up ending. They gave $100,000, $50,000 to the Las Vegas LGBT Center, $25,000 to GLSEN, and $25,000 to the Trevor Project. And then they gave $12,500 to the LGBT Blogger Summit that happens every year. They decided that instead of threatening to sue, after they called and threatened to sue, there were several of us that actually got noticed at the same time, and we were, I think, the only site that didn't take down the post, and because other folks had, you know, reported on the original post that we had done.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't take down our post, and instead I put up a post that basically said, screw you, we're not taking it down, and don't be a bully and call me threatening to sue me for millions of dollars. That, of course, went everywhere, and then the bad publicity just kept building and building for Rock, until eventually they said, look, let's try to settle this. They made sure that Michael Savage was not making any profits whatsoever off of Rockstar Energy Drink. Michael's wife served with Rockstar Energy Drink and with the Savage Productions, and she quit her job with Savage Productions just to go over to Rockstar Energy Drink and work over there. So they did make a complete cut with Savage. And in a press release, too, you have, I don't remember what the direct quote was, but you have the kid saying, you know, I don't agree with what my dad says, and I think violence against anyone is unacceptable. You know, but at the same time,
hey, Bill,
it's kind of amazing to have the kid saying, my dad screwed up, and I don't agree with that whatsoever, and in fact, I'm going to give over $100,000 to LGBT people to make it stop.
What lessons can we learn from this experience of the boycott Rockstar Energy Drink and the way that that company tried to silence your opinion about their product and their ties as conservative hate monger?
I think what's important to learn from there is that the power that the LGBT community has as a solo individual, and then becoming part of something larger. Most of the action that was taken around Rockstar came because of either an online petition, or they read it on a blog, or they got their information online and they acted online and put pressure on Rockstar. And that was something that they did solo.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were doing it, you know, it's the power of social networking. On Facebook, you know, you can start out posting something very small and it will build into a huge snowball, which is what happened with Rockstar. And I think it swept the LGBT community by storm, which is nice, but now we need to take that energy and put it into some political issues that are actually going to benefit the entire community more than $100,000.
Mm.
So let's talk about the blog swarm that you and my feeling about it was like when we got the news that day that you got Pam's House Blend, Tola Road, Joe My God, and there was a fifth one but it was a very small group of bloggers getting together to put pressure on the Human Rights Campaign Fund, to put pressure on President Obama, to put pressure on our politicians to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
Would it not been more effective to sort of have a countdown or have an ability for as many bloggers, sort of like a phone tree, to participate in this as opposed to announcing it all of a sudden and then having everybody else kind of playing catch up?
Well, I think that's exactly what happened, though. The first few of us handed out and kind of did all of our posts at the same time. And that's, I mean, and blogs have become the modern day phone tree. As soon as we put it up, it was putting out the original call.
Mm-hmm.
And other bloggers quickly picked it up. And I mean, it was like working down the phone tree. I come from the days of, you know, working with ACT UP when the phone tree was the best organizing model that we had. And blogs aren't that much different. The way things that can be carried now over social networking, and the telephone was a social model.
Well, did you hear Human Rights Campaign Fund's response to it? They were like, your threats don't scare us.
Is that what they said really fast?
They didn't say that, but they were like, you know, we only got this many calls and you were doing a good job. And, you know, because I guess a lot of this is coming from the fact that Joe Solomise, he's the chairman, am I correct?
Director.
The director of the lobbying group. he feels that we shouldn't put as much pressure as we're doing on President Obama, and that, you know, he kind of put his foot in his mouth by saying it's like comparing bloggers to like people living in their basements.
Well, you know, I think it's important to realize that, you know, Joe is the president of HRC, and he has a very specific job to do. That's to keep his board members happy and to work with the administration, since it's a Democratic administration, to try to get as many LGBT-positive pieces of legislation passed as possible.
Mm-hmm.
For Joe to be able to do that and be able to work with the White House, he needs to have a good relationship with the White House. Sometimes when you're in that position, you're not going to want to put as much pressure on your friends as you really could because, well, you want to keep that good friendship with them. And our job as the outside agitators and the bloggers has been to say, you know, maybe it's time to put a little strain on that friendship and say a year is not nearly fast enough. We don't need to wait through a bunch more studies. Action can be taken now to stop discharging soldiers under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that just, it needs to happen now.
What did you think about when the Joint Chief of Staff, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, said it's like it's time to repeal it?
Well, and Dick Cheney, and Liz Cheney, and the National Security Advisor. I mean, they just keep dropping anymore, you know, Colin Powell. Everyone knows that it's time to go back and look at Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is why I think it's even more important that the Human Rights Campaign actually stand up and say, come on, we stand with Dick Cheney on this one. It doesn't need a year.
Right.
I mean, how much guts does it take to be able to say, you know, Cheney doesn't think it needs a year.
Mm. Well, this just happened today. The Army Chief of Staff, General George Casey, told the Senate Armed Service Committee that he has serious concerns about attempting to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell while we're in the middle of a war. So it looks like now we're getting maybe the other side is coming out again. I don't know.
There was always at least one member of the Joint Chiefs that opposed gays in the military, and we kind of knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can have grave concerns, and he can have those all that he wants. But when it boils down to it, he's not the top man on the totem pole. He's mm-hmm. not even, you know, the head of the Joint Chiefs.
What kind of motivation? Because I think some bloggers are maybe listening to this and thinking, the scope of my blog is to write about food or write about celebrities or fashion, and getting involved in politics, even though I may be gay, lesbian, or transgendered, or intersexed, or bisexual, queer identified, I may not want to get my hands dirty and deal with these controversial or difficult or even boring topics.
Well, I think it's important. If you're going to start a blog, the number one bit of advice that I always give is to write about what you love, because if it's not something that you're interested in, it's quickly going to become a chore and you're not going to want to do it. If it's something that you love and you enjoy talking about, and you know, every day you really bore the people around you because you just won't shut up about Elizabeth Hasselbeck and every last thing that she's doing, that's the perfect time to start the Elizabeth Hasselbeck blog, because then you won't, you know, be bugging everyone else.
And people that
I really hope that if any of your readers or listeners out there decide to start the Elizabeth Hasselbeck blog, that they will send me a link to that, because oh my God, Fausto.
Are you obsessed?
What kind of listener do you have that would start an Elizabeth Hasselbeck blog?
Oh, I'm sure somebody's out there doing it already.
I'm sure. But do they listen to
Well, if they don't, they should. We'll talk about it, too. You know, the thing about it is that some people criticize, you know, very successful, well-to-do bloggers that are making money from writing about celebrities, and when it suits them, you know, Perez Hilton is the person I'm thinking of, but there's others out there that are also sort of guilty of this behavior, is when it suits them, they're politically driven, they're motivated, they're for gay rights, but when it doesn't suit them, they're silent on these type of important issues. And I'm wondering what you, as the person who is well-known for this site, would have to say to someone like Perez Hilton about their politics, or how can they be more politically active?
Well, I think it's as easy as, you know, typing out a post, and today you're politically active, especially once you have a site as big as Perez's. But I don't necessarily know that there's anything wrong with picking your battles. Perez's blog is about celebrities, that's what people come to that blog for. They don't come for an in-depth discussion of the intricacies of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act of 2009. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's completely off topic. But you can find ways to work. I mean, we work in celebrities, we work in pop culture all the time into our posts just for cultural references. And it's really easy to throw in, you know, references to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or just about any LGBT issue into some celebrity and pop culture posts. And he really does that often. I mean, he'll mention whether or not so-and-so is gay, if they've got a partner. It's just a matter of fact. And I think sometimes we forget that those little mentions that we get add up to pretty big. I mean, how long ago was it before you saw a bunch of LGBT stuff on the internet? Remember when it was just Simpsons?
And sure,
everything
yeah.
that was on the internet was just everything was about Simpsons and, you know, homepages.
And now everything's
and
gay.
You were lucky to find, you know, another gay person's website that was just a homepage, you know?
Well, I think that gay and lesbian people, especially gay men, have been very good about search engine optimization. Because mm-hmm. I always explain to people like this, it's what kind of tag words are you going to put on your profile when you're looking and wanting to be found by someone in a dating hookup website?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're a bear, you're going to put the word bear on your profile. Same goes for your blog. If you're into Carrie Prejean, you want that word to appear on your profile. And it's all about people discovering you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so as the internet advanced, I think gay people were really good about intuitively using these tools to find a voice. And that's why we tend to dominate so much of the chosen fields. You know, some of the biggest blogs, some of the biggest YouTube video channels, some of the biggest podcasts like ours mm-hmm. are run by gay people because we understand how to use this media because we rely on it so much.
Well, and come on, Fausto, Doogie Howser was the original blogger.
He was?
What?
He was?
Think about it. Every show okay. he did that show, typing in there on his computer, he just didn't have the internet to upload it to. That's because Neil Patrick Harris mm-hmm. is always ahead of his time.
Always.
Oh, ahead.
So, Bill, you have lots of contributors to the Balearico Project. Do you have people use their real names, or do some people use pen names? Or how do you feel about that, like people that write anonymously?
We ask that people use their real name. I think we have one contributor currently, maybe two,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't use their real last name. Out of, you know, security concerns or mm-hmm. family concerns. And we've taken all of those. I think we've had three or four now total.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken those on a case-by-case basis to decide whether or not we thought it was going to be okay or if it kind of took away from the authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only think of one person right now, but, you know, there's almost 100 contributors. But it's not a problem. It's close. And you know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, because we come across that from time to time is people want to come on the show. They want to do things. They're like, I don't want to use my name. And we're kind of like, well, we're about being authentic. We're about presenting real people. So it just, I don't know. It's a difficult challenge, especially when you're dealing with gay stuff. And there's a lot of people, like, let's say you're a teacher. You want to be out there. You want to tell people important things. But you also, you know, don't want to lose your job or have, like, these kids at school find out about you or parents. So
or if you're a drag queen and you have a stage name versus the name your checks are cut out to, mm-hmm. or if you're a radical fairy and you have a fairy name mm-hmm. that everyone knows you about, but then, you know, your day-to-day job is something that you feel is not as interesting.
Yeah. Or if you're transgender and, you know, technically your name on your ID is something else.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's all sorts of circumstances. So we just kind of take it on a case-by-case basis mm-hmm. and... It's actually not. It's not sprung up for us very often.
Okay.
We had.
I'm just wondering because I think I'm going to write out a blogger I know. She's like, I want you to come and comment on something I wrote about like basketball players. They should be out. Well, she doesn't blog under her real name, so I'm wondering should I be like, why do you care if these people are out if you're not even out? So. I don't know.
That's a great point. I mean, it's like, you know, because it is interesting. It's like all these bloggers are like, they should come. Like Perez Hilton, for example, uh-huh. for the first like 3 or 4 years, nobody knew what his real name, and he's outing other people. And I'm like, hello, you're not even out yourself. Listen to this interesting quote. And, you know, his film, documentary on the magnetic fields is debuting at South by Southwest on Monday after our forum. That's going to be the 15th
yeah.
of March. Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields and also a party promoter in New York City for Runt.
I think Runt's over.
But, you know, I like reminding people.
It's like 5 years over.
Well, I like it. Runt was a special night for men, for short men and those who appreciate them. So this is what his, he always likes to put his foot in his mouth, like us. And so this is what he said. Here's my advice to budding young songwriters. Stay in the closet. Don't come out. I think the outing movement and the general propaganda that everyone ought to come out, I think that damaged a lot of people, actually. I think it's clear from the careers of gay performers that the way to be successful is to come out later, not beforehand.
Well, let's just be clear. I think the guy couldn't be more wrong, and I think he sounds like a jackass.
He's a nice guy when he wants to be, though. You know, and people love his music.
Well, that's completely different than a political opinion, though. Because I think what he's not taking into account is, yes, there were a lot of people that had damaged their careers, and they paid a really high sacrifice for us to be able to come out now. So to actually, like, encourage people to stay in the closet after some of the most brilliant minds in music and film in almost every career have lost their jobs and sacrificed their employment, that's just craven and cowardly.
But what do you say to somebody who runs a record label and says, we want musicians to come out. We think it's healthy for them. We think it's healthy for society. But the problem is that gay and lesbian consumers tend to be less supportive of artists when they come out, especially gay men, than when they stay in the closet.
I think, at what point does the product sell itself? You know what I mean? Let's be frank. We could all talk about Rupert Everett and, you know, how his career didn't take off after he came out. But was he really that good of an actor to start with?
Ooh.
And he kind of complains a lot, too.
He's whiny.
Has it hurt Ian McKellen? No. Why? Ian McKellen is a master actor. Mm. I think it depends on each. Has it really hurt Ellen? No.
Well, it certainly benefited Condoleezza Rice for her to stay in the closet. I mean, and her argument is that you have to be twice as good as the straight white man. You have to be the better piano player. You have to be smarter, faster, stronger in order to compete evenly.
You know, but that's, I don't think that necessarily has to be just with being LGBT, but, you know, it's also being a woman, being a person of color. We have all of those difficulties set up for all of us all the time, but would we expect Condoleezza to go in and say, you know, no, I'm not a woman?
Because this is a situation that we find ourselves in. We would like to play music from independent LGBT artists that rocks. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, and because we think there is value and money to be made in promoting queer music for queer audiences. But the problem that we find ourselves is that queer musicians don't get it. And they don't understand how to harness the power of the internet. They want somebody else, like a record label, to do all the work for them. Mm-hmm. And they can be whiny and negative and self-obsessed. And so when they come out of the closet, there's other things happening. Like, I think, like, Adam Lambert is a good example of somebody who successful in some ways and struggling and putting roadblocks in front of him in order to be successful financially as a musician. And I would like to see people like Adam Lambert being out of the closet, but at the same time not be so whiny, you know? That's the way I would describe him. In interviews, he's like, no, you know, it's like, and at the same time, gay and lesbian audiences, especially gay men, need to buy that CD and, you know, hang up that poster. If you really love Adam Lambert, then show it, you know?
Buy his music.
Buy his music, because it's like, I'm just so sick of people like asking for people to come out of the closet. And when they do come out of the closet, they're like, well.
Well, and I think the point, because again, though, I think a lot of it depends on the product. When Adam came out, his album wasn't out yet. Mm. I mean, he came out before the album hit. So if he comes out and the album sucks and nobody buys it, is that because he came out or is it because the album sucks? I mean, his album's doing pretty well.
Well, RuPaul wrote on her blog, or his blog, that actually she was ready to hate his music and she didn't really care for it too much, but she put aside her own prejudices and listened to the album several times and actually thinks it's a pretty good album and it's one of her favorite things and she likes to play it a lot now. And that she feels that a lot of people have prejudices, just like we have internalized homophobia, that we have internalized homophobia against openly gay content creators.
You know, there may be something to that, actually. I have the album. I like the album. I listen to it. It's on my iPhone, and I plug it in and play it in the car all the time. But it's interesting to me that still, I don't know how much of it, I can buy the internalized homophobia argument. At the same time, it's the same thing that applies throughout life, and that's the cream of the crop wins. I mean, it's only been lately that in America we've decided to start celebrating the bland potato chip, you know, and making Pringles and Lay's number one, you know, elevating McDonald's to the idea of dining. For the most part, the best TV shows still are ones that are well-written, well-acted. So a lot of the good movies break out of the pack and aren't just generic. We've thrown out in front of you are the ones that have actors, good plots, good storylines. If you... an artist and you come out and you have a worthwhile product, people listen, notice. And on Balearico Project, Friday at 5 o'clock, our managing editor, Alex Blaze, puts up Queer Music Friday posts.
Mm-hmm.
And he regularly, he doesn't ask anyone if he can do it. He just finds a YouTube video or a video of them performing online. He knows whether or not they've talked about their sexuality before, and he'll have a quote for it. And he'll put it all up, and he's really helped spark some interest in some little-known queer artists that come back and thank him for it because they never would have thought to market themselves as a queer artist. You know, they were just Joe Blow that happened to have said in an interview once, yeah, I'm gay. But so it can be a selling point, especially, you know, because Alex goes through and, you know, and finds good songs. If the song's good, that's not going to stop anyone, I think, you know. Oh, you're gay too? Oh, never mind. Do we have a lot of bitchy queens? Of course. But come on, there's bitchy people in every, you know, community in life.
I don't know, sometimes the thing is that we see like mediocre, like Britney Spears hasn't, you know, she sometimes puts out really lame music. Mm-hmm. And you know, does everything wrong and she still has a career. And then these guys are like sweating bullets and killing themselves, trying to put out careers. And they're like, well, if I just became a drag queen. And so this brings up another interesting topic of conversation is that some people have said, and we've said this, is that sometimes gay audiences force feminize gay male talent because they more they can appreciate more hearing that message from a drag queen than they can from a guy without a costume.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
Wow. Well.
Well, it's like. Well, if you like, just to further clarify, I think we do that a lot of times when we're talking to friends or you know people. You call her oh her or she
or girl. What's going on? And it's a playful thing, but there is something serious to be said. That sometimes gay performers, musicians, and comedians and entertainers feel like they have to dress up in drag in order to attract attention. And if you talk to a lot of drag queens that have been in the business for 10 or 20 years, they do feel like sometimes like it would be really nice just to not be able to, you know, they enjoy doing the costume, they enjoy the routine, but part of them is that they feel like it's a unnecessary baggage.
Right. So Bill, what's your drag queen name?
I'm afraid I don't have one.
Not even on Halloween.
But I must admit, when I was, I think, 3 or 4 years old, my mother loves to tell this story. When we went to go visit family in Florida, I walked out of the bathroom because my aunt had the big, huge bath towel, and I had apparently wrapped it all around my head. And other than that, I was butt naked, wandering through the house, and when they asked me what I was doing, I told them they needed to address me as Queen Wilhelmina Cracker from now on, and I was wearing my crown.
Okay, listeners, his drag name is Queen Wilhelmina Cracker.
You heard it here
so
first.
There you go. That's what I choose, would be Wilhelmina Cracker.
Now, Bill, you're based out of Indiana, and you have the senator that's recently leaving. He already left his Senate post, or he's going to leave it, Senator Evan Bayh. What's going to happen with that seat? What are you hoping to happen, and what are you hoping will not happen?
Well, yeah, Evan Bayh's resignation has caused me untold headaches this week. Evan has, Senator Bayh has not dropped out. He's not resigned the seat. He's just said that he will not be seeking election. So he's there for, you know, almost a year. Right now, Representative Brad Ellsworth from Southern Indiana is the top contender for the seat. Representative Ellsworth has an abysmal record on LGBT rights. He scores 30% with the Human Rights Campaign. And to put that into perspective for you, the Republican that he beat had a 38%.
Wow.
The Democrat right to the, you know, next door to his district has a 50%. Richard Lugar, the Republican senator, has a 60%. Evan Bayh, 90%. This guy is far to the right on LGBT issues than even our Republican senator. He's not progressive on, you know, he's anti-choice. He's voted for the bailouts. He is exactly every Republican's wet dream. The only thing that's, you know, a Democrat about him is that the D behind his name, practically.
Does he have a good chance?
I'm sorry?
Does he have a good chance of taking the seat?
Yes, he stands a good chance of actually being the candidate. Right now, Representative Baron Hill is pretty much the second place candidate right now, but Ellsworth has now dropped out of his primary race so that he can concentrate on the Senate. With Indiana politics, there's no way that the Democrats are going to let two congressional seats be unfilled with incumbents. So essentially, he's boxing Baron Hill in so that Baron can't run. There's former Secretary of State Joe Hogsett here, who is actually a progressive and would be someone that we could rally around. And then there's Hammond Mayor McDermott that is also staying in the race. It's really looking like it's Ellsworth's. I'm working to try to bring progressive attention to say that Ellsworth shouldn't be our candidate. I think an Ellsworth candidacy would be a nightmare. You know, in a year when only 1 in 10 people think that Congress is doing a good job, probably not the year that you want to pick a Washington insider as your candidate. Maybe it's time to pick the progressive guy that's not from Washington and could actually rally the same people that Obama did when he won Indiana, you know. Unwed mothers, women, Latinos, labor, the LGBT community. All of the, I mean, Brad Ellsworth has ticked off each one of those communities by voting against them. He doesn't have a base.
Well, it's certainly interesting to watch and see how this develops, and I imagine it's probably going to give you many more headaches over the coming year.
Bill, well, what is the future? We got to wrap this up here. What is the future of political activism and using the internet? Are we better off having the internet as a tool in these group blogs and Twitters for advancement of LGBT rights? Or are we sort of like different problems, new techniques?
What was it called? Clicktivism?
Clicktivism.
It's for activism.
What was it? I think Trish said it the other day on your podcast. That's slacktivism.
Slacktivism.
I'm totally stealing that word from her, by the way.
I know. It's wonderful. We use it, too.
No, actually, I think now that, especially for the LGBT community, because I think we have to look at it historically in that, you know, we always used to have to go to the bars or maybe the parks or the bathhouses. But they were all almost forbidden places that we shouldn't be to be able to meet other people of our own kind. We had to sneak to do it. Think back to Stonewall when the cops came to bust up the bar because there were too many fags hanging out together having a drink. As the online community has grown, it's provided a way for the LGBT community to reach out in ways that were never available to us before. Now, the phone trees may have been great, but they worked in places like, you know, New York City, and they worked in Chicago. But when it came to a place like Indianapolis, there were only 5 people willing to be out or willing to even stand up for anything. It didn't really do you much good. Now with the internet, I mean, we're pulling in 500,000 people each month. That's huge as far as the terms of LGBT organizing. I mean, where else do you get that many people in a month's time from the LGBT community to pay, especially to a political site or a political cause?
Well,
I think the future is actually incredibly online because LGBT people have almost mainstreamed into the culture in a lot of ways. As we're on Facebook, not all of our friends are queer. We've got all of our straight friends. We've got our family that can turn around, repost the content, or talk about our issues and slowly start talking about our issues to their other straight friends. And at this point, I think that that web of connections is what's really going to drive the LGBT community forward. I think blogs, social networking, all of it, eventually most media will go online and it will become one big symbiotic beast, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone working together and feeding the beast. But
it'll be like the Borg, a very gay, flamboyant Borg.
Very, oh my God.
And Bill will be the queen, Wilhelmina.
Yes, the queen Wilhelmina. Will you make me a costume?
Absolutely.
I'll make one out of aluminum foil
and duct tape.
And duct tape.
I will wear it like a tiara.
What do you think you'd like to see some more established long-term LGBT media organizations, say like Out Magazine or Here Television, that are not really effectively using the internet, and in fact, like Windows Media, actually going bankrupt because they're not adapting fast enough?
You know, I think it's easy to criticize. And I think it's easy to say, God, you guys really screwed up. But I don't think that queer media is alone in that problem. I mean, that's happening to newspapers all across the country. They're folding left and right. Some are going to online only. Since The Advocate had to cut back staff, their website has gotten 10 times better. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what their advertising dollars are. And I know that's a problem often. I think the entire publishing industry, especially in the newspaper and magazine industry, is going through that right now. And it's almost like, you know, picking on a child when you pick at them, because I don't know what the solution is either. And nobody has been able to figure it out.
Well, it sort of bothers me because a fact that is the vast majority of content on these websites. And you know, if you look at LGBT websites and blogs collectively, they're run by a handful of people. And if you look at our print media, it's run by large companies with lots of staff. Probably if you created a football team of bloggers versus people who work for print publications, the print publications would outnumber us 7-1 in just that in numbers of people. And yet at the same time, it's in our hands. It's in the people on the internet that the future of the voice of our community is in our hands. So, but we're not journalists. We're not trained journalists, and we're not spending a lot of our money or time leaving the house, going to meet with politicians face to face and interacting out in the real world. So what bothers me and what gives me a little bit of concern and pause is that gay and lesbian journalism and advocacy journalism is struggling.
Well, I think that depends on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. I think as you're looking at the top, especially the blogs that talk about LGBT politics, you've got Pam's House Blend. She's not corporate-owned. Balerico Project, we're not corporate-owned. Joe Jervis, Joe My God, not corporate-owned. Andy Toll, not corporate-owned for Toll Road. You've got Queerty. They are corporate-owned. Any other big ones that I...
And when was the last time any of you guys met face-to-face with a politician?
I did this afternoon.
Okay.
John Aravos' America blog, that was the other one I was trying to think of. He does regular interviews. Pam does regular interviews with politicians, you know, on video and in print. It may have been a while for Joe, since he tends to be more of a news source as versus doing interviews, but that's not his shtick. But for most of it, Queerty, I don't know. I follow Queerty somewhat, but I know they do regular interviews, but I don't know how much with politicians.
But do you see what I'm saying? It's like these are individuals, and it's like I would love to see you guys being as rich as Rupert Murdoch and having enough money and staff to really aggressively pursue these things. But, it, you know, a one person can only do so much.
And that's the beauty for Balerico, is that I get a lot of contributors, and, I mean, they're all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we've made it, is the generosity of our contributors, because there's no way that one person can go out and cover everything.
So is that the secret to the future of blogging, group blogs?
Group blogs, most definitely. Although, you know, one thing I do want to say, though, going back really quick, because I think it's important to acknowledge this. You know, as we're talking about the print publications and how they have a larger staff, since the collapse of the huge conglomerate with the Washington Blade going down and everything, it's not just under the control of one company anymore, especially among the newspaper industries. And even, you know, like with Regent and The Advocate, I think it's important to recognize that they have a reporter that's part of the White House pool, at Carrie Elleveld, and she is one of the best LGBT reporters in the nation. And she may be working for a company and be corporate owned, but she is still one of the best. And even for those of us, you know, I may get my own interviews with politicians, you know, like the conversation today, but I still count on Carrie Elleveld to tell me a lot of what's going on in Washington because she's there. And, you know, she relies on us for Indiana news. Mm-hmm. But just because they're corporate owned doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad. It, again, depends on what the end product is.
Well, a lot of these writers are saying, like, if my company folds, I'll give up journalism altogether. And I'm like, I don't see that happening.
What are you going to do, work at Starbucks?
I mean, you know, you can't never kill a real reporter.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting to me, too, that you see all of, like, you know, the New York Times, could they spawn more frickin' bloggers that have now set up their own, you know, URL and hung out their own shingle and, you know, hi, I'll sell ads over here and I'll just keep working on my own blog. Some of them make it, some of them don't. It's mm-hmm. the same as all of the rest of us. But a lot of the journalists that aren't working for newspapers anymore or magazines have started their own blogs.
Right on.
A lot of the freelancers are keeping their own blogs.
Well, certainly Andy Toll used to be a genre magazine's editor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, you know, here's a good example of somebody starting a very effective website based on the ashes of a dead magazine.
Well, I think genre was still around when he started blogging, but
well, he just died, honey, like, you know,
last year or something.
That's like you jumping off of an airplane. That's just because you jumped off the airplane doesn't mean it was about to crash.
But you know, you've got to give this to Andy.
Yeah,
he knew when to go.
Oh yeah,
he knew where the future was.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, far be it for me to criticize Andy for that. He was ahead of well ahead of the curve on that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, Bill, is there anything else you'd like to bring up about Bellerico or blogging in general?
Blogging is an ego sport. You'll never find any of us out here that don't think we've got something to say and that everyone should obviously listen to it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be putting it on the internet. So the secret to blogging is find something that you love and you want to talk about constantly and then talk about it. Constantly.
Thank you so much, Bill.
And that's why we always talk about showgirls.
And then go talk to other people about how much you constantly talk about the thing that you're passionate about. And by the time that you've worked yourself in a big circle and you don't even know what it is that you're talking about anymore, someone will finally have noticed you.
And that's all it takes. Bill, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for giving me a call.
Yeah,
and we look forward. So once again, you're going to be on Saturday, 3:30 with you're going to be with Trish Bendix of After Ellen, me from Feast of Fun, and
Sinclair Sexsmith
of the Sugar Butch Chronicles. And that's going to be 3:30 at the Austin Community. What is it? The Conference Center. Mm-hmm. Downtown. And then the following day at 9:00, we're all going to be hanging out at Oil Can Harry's. They're going to give us drinks.
Woo!
And you're going to stand up and play two of your favorite viral videos of the last year and explain why they're your favorite. And it can be stuff you made. In fact,
I just keep doing the chipmunk that looks over its shoulder over and over and over again.
Yes.
It's only like a second long. Instead of just two, can I have like 20?
The dramatic squirrel or whatever it is.
Listen, just arrange it in a thing and bring it as a file so we can play it off our laptop. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun getting all these bloggers together and like talking about their blogs and also playing like YouTube videos mm-hmm. in a bar.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And it's 18 and over.
Really?
Yeah. Oil Can Harry's is 18 and over.
Oh, my God. That's right.
So if you're under 21, you can come. You can't drink, but you can come.
You sound a little disappointed, Bill.
You know, well, I mean, Fausto, I really thought you were going to be interested in the drunk 19-year-olds. I thought you would be with me on that one, man.
Well, I can't legally say anything about that. On the record, I can't say anything about it, but you know, it's like, it's Austin. It's a party town. It's the live music capital of the world, according to their gas bills.
Really?
It's printed on the back of their gas bill.
Really?
I've never been to Austin, so I'm looking.
Oh, you're gonna love it. I hope the weather's good.
Yeah, we have a contributor that lives in Austin that I'm going to stay with, Paige. So, and my partner Jeremy is coming too. We're going to drive down to Austin so that we don't have to. We've done so much travel lately and flying and airports, so we're actually kind of taking a week and taking a leisurely drive down to Austin, then coming back up here.
Sweet! It's a great city. I used to have a cable access show in drag.
Really?
Yeah, for 3 years, the show The Faustina. It was bilingual and bisexual. Lots of crazy fun. Austin's a great city. It's like Los Angeles without the attitude. It really is.
And rattlesnakes.
Yeah. It has rattlesnakes, though. So watch out where you sit.
Okay, well, I'd hate to have something bite me in the ass while I'm there.
Well, I think you're used to it.
At least no rattlesnakes.
Bill, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks for calling, guys.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bill Browning lives with his partner, Jeremy Davis, in Indianapolis, Indiana, with their 4 dogs and 2 cats. That's according to his bio.
Uh-huh.
It's a farm there. You can read his group blog at Balerico.com or follow him on Twitter at Balerico.
And I want to remind people, too, that you can comment on today's show at feastoffun.com. Let Bill know that you really appreciate him coming on the Feast of Fun.
We're going to leave you with some beautiful romantic music to set the mood.
From our Ménage à Trois with Bill.
Yes. Well, this is a different Ménage à Trois. This is Matt Alber. He lives in Washington, D.C.
Does he really?
I thought he did.
No, he lives in L.A. Remember, he worked at the that leather bar.
For some you know what I'm thinking? Because of that video, that atrocious video he did with our
Tom
friend
Goss.
Tom Goss.
It was wonderful intent, but the sound, the wind just ruined it. So I'd like to see a studio recorded version of that, guys.
Considering that the two of them are so gorgeous and their music is so fantastic, and the video was like, what are you saying, honey?
Do it in bikinis.
Yeah, shirtless.
I want to remind people, too, we can't do the show without your support. So please visit feastoffun.com and make a donation. Every little bit helps.
And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/feastoffun, or on Facebook, facebook.com/feastoffun. And it's that easy. It just, we loved to hear from you. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Scream out quite so loudly when we screech to a halt. I'm just never prepared to handle the ride. Maybe we should get on something simpler, like a giant balloon. I've got 2 tickets left, and so do you. Instead of giving them away.